Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed. This is one of our deep dive episodes. In this episode, we will be deep diving into Palpatine's Lab of Horrors, a place I'm excited to visit for a short time. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
And I'm Ken Napsok. I'm excited for this Star Wars Halloween adventure. It is Force Center scene by scene, and this is going to be a fun one here. I've watched this scene so many times already. It's a classic in my mind. But before we get to that, I want to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. As always, we'd like to do a Force Center recommends an audiobook we think you should try out on us. And Joseph, this one ties in pretty well, I think.
Yeah, we are recommending Dooku Jedi Lost by Kevin Scott. That is also a spooky story about some dark side people having some dark side problems. So to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/ForceCenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/ForceCenter for your free audiobook.
Dark side problems all around the galaxy.
Look for that Teen Disney Plus show coming soon. Dark Side Problems at Dark Side High. Who knows? They have lots of monster highs, zombies, yeah, go to prom kind of shows. So you never know. You never know what you might get on good old Disney Plus. But for now, we're going to keep visiting the galaxy of Star Wars like we do here on Force Center. Ken, you suggested this a while back to just dig into specific scenes that I've been really having a ton of fun with these episodes. We're mostly breaking down big scenes in Star Wars, but eventually we might get to just kind of weird scenes or favorite scenes. We've discussed right now Rey's Cave of Mirrors, Dooku's Cell of Half-Truths, where he first met Obi-Wan, Palpatine's Box of Lies, where he seduced Anakin at the Opera House there, Obi-Wan's Hut of Exposition, and now for our spooky Halloween season, and I'm a big fan of spooky Halloween season, we're going to discuss Palpatine's Lab of Horrors, 3 minutes and about 13 seconds of terror and emotional manipulation in the bowels of a Sith temple. What could be better than that, Ken?
I mean, who does not want to hang out in the bowels of a Sith temple? Just jump.
Right. I'm a great tour guide, right? Come on down to the bowels of the Sith temple. Just to kind of take the temperature of the room here, you are not a fan of super scary movies, but do you enjoy the general spooky Halloween season?
No. Where's the candy? Yeah, I get scared real easily. Just not a fan of horror movies. Psychological thrillers. All right, that's a little different. You know, and occasionally I'll get tricked into watching one and I go, well, that wasn't that bad. You know, I'm okay. And then I have nightmares a week later. It's just something, I don't know, just the way I was built. I didn't celebrate Halloween like a lot of other kids growing up. You know, we celebrate a lot of holidays, but it was more of a different view in my house of what Halloween was. So I just didn't grow up with it, I guess. Never went trick-or-treating, any of those things, Joseph. I was denied the right to go get candy from strangers. So it's just not part of my upbringing. So that could factor into it. But as presented here, I am all on board.
No, that's great. Yeah, no, it's totally understandable to have the different viewpoints because of the way we were raised or what we experienced. And yeah, I had some trick-or-treating, but then some of the general fears of the era that we both grew up in set in, and Halloween became a watched special on television. Who knows? Maybe one of the sitcoms will have something scary on it. Maybe Cheers will have a Halloween party you can watch. So then as I got older, you know, I like spooky stuff. I like gothic stuff. So I really like to do shows on Halloween and like to try to celebrate it. And I think the reason that I like it is, you know, culturally, you get it. It's a lot of fun stuff. Yeah. You go to you dress up and you go to other people's houses and demand they give you candy. It is like a great sort of anti-guilt holiday of like, yeah, no, I'm not really being reverent about anything. I'm just saying you give me candy kind of for general cultural, but then for kind of like what it means as we get into some of the stuff that's in this scene about like, how do you deal with the things that scare you by putting them in fiction, and you know, how does it help you kind of process the things that you are scared of by putting them up there on the big screen?
I see. That's where I failed.
The dealing with your own fears.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Put a note. Watch Nightmare on Elm Street tonight. Okay.
Do not. That one's scary, Ken. Don't.
Okay, but I grew up off of Elm Street in my hometown. My street intersected with Elm Street.
Oh,
how's a second grader going to watch that movie?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like sometimes it's the idea, like Nightmare on Elm Street is super scary, but I grew up with older kids telling me about Friday the 13th. Like it was the scariest thing ever. And like 2 years ago, I finally watched it. And it's like, it's mostly just horny teens playing board games while a really slow person, like, and if you grow up with it, it's really scary and amazing, but you see it from a different perspective as an adult. It's very strange. Nightmare on Elm Street would have freaked me out if I lived by Elm Street. That's, you made a lot of good choices.
I could see Elm Street from the second floor of our house. What? There's no way I'm going to watch that on VHS.
Absolutely not. I almost started singing the song, the rhyme, and like, I'm not going to do that to you. No, no. Let's get into the horror of Star Wars. So despite some of your mixed feelings about scary versus spooky and how it all works culturally during Halloween and all that, we've often discussed wanting some kind of Star Wars horror movie, including one that I think we've all pitched set in an old Sith temple, whatever. There are some Jedi Padawans who are trapped in a scary Sith temple. Makes sense for a Star Wars horror movie. Do you see this scene we're about to discuss as a little mini horror movie within a Star Wars movie.
I do now, and it's probably a little pinch of it, to be fair, you know, depending on how scary you go with some movies. But the mood, the vibe, the visuals, not for nothing, but Palpatine's pretty evil. I consider him a problem. I think it's more than just an homage to me, but it has a look and feel. I know, you know, some people might say, but for me, and I'm not, jokes aside of me being scared easily, you know, just seemed to, I'm not terrified during the scene in a real way, but in a story way, I am. So yeah, I think it's a good, healthy pinch of it. Initially, I got to say this, when I first saw the scene and the movie starts, I mean, the first couple times you see any Star Wars movie, you're taking everything in. And I was so wonderfully, and I say wonderfully, overwhelmed by this opening sequence, including what we see with Kylo before this scene starts. The fact that it was, oh my God, they're going straight to the reveal of Palpatine. They're not going to sit on it. We're getting all this information. It's a different start to a Star Wars movie. And I, you know, the pacing, a lot of people, when you the first couple of times they see Rise of Skywalker, oh, it's so fast. It's so fast. The movie had such great pace. And I don't think that's true. The more you watch it, it just packs a lot of punch with each scene and moves quick, to be sure. But I was lost in a lot of that in the first scene, just trying to take it all in. So it was the subsequent viewings where this became that dark, moody, gothic horror cold open that that I do love.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I think especially the first time when you start with the dead speak, and then, you know, is that Mustafar the Slaughter? What is what is the Sith Wayfinder about? And then, he's going to the looks like unknown regions type place. Cool. And then you really settle into this, and it's still all this information coming at you. And I think that is really a choice. It is not so much about pace of the actual film to me. It is more about this decision to be like, we're going to get back to that adventure serial roots, and we're going to throw out a bunch of ideas. We're going to give you the information that we think you need, and we're going to, you know, keep moving. And there's a lot of information in this scene, which I think really affects the way people see it the first time around or the second time around. But I know even people, some friends of mine who don't like the movie for lots of reasons are always like, but I like that scene. I really like the mood, that it's a great little horror film. I wish we had had more of that. And for me, I think it all works in terms of the Star Wars of it, the themes, which we're going to dive into in this episode, of what's Palpatine trying to do, what is Kylo feeling, all these things, the symbolism of what all of the different sort of iconography of the planet and the spaces, all that stuff is meaningful to me. But I also think it works is this really, the reason it works is a horror scene. It's not just homage. It all has meaning to me, which we'll discuss. But also, it's not like slasher movie jump scare. It's not like Kylo rounds the corner and the cultists pop out, right? You know, or Snoke's dead body falls from the vat when you're not expecting it. It's not jump scare horror movie. It's this creeping psychological dread. To me, it is just like the Star Wars version of 1,000 horror scenes you have seen or read, where there's a creepy thing you need in the basement, and you're not even sure what's in the basement, and you don't even really want to be down there, but you got to go down there to get what you need. And Kylo is definitely, you know, the villain of the movie as it starts, but we've already been trained to have empathy for Kylo. We've been trained to see the possibility that he could be pulled by the light. So I think you're kind of empathizing with Kylo as he goes down into this almost like, the call is coming from inside the house. Got to go down to the basement mood.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. I mean, we're going to talk about that. The visual, the symbolism, all that, it's all there. Yeah. So I'm with you on that.
Excellent. Well, sorry. Something else?
I do want to see Palpatine fall from the sky.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh my God. Just like a pinata just dropping from the ceiling. Suddenly creepy. The dead speak and fall from the ceiling. What we usually do here on these scene by scenes episodes is start a half step back. We are really just talking about from when Kylo lands on Exegol and not tackling all the great stuff on Mustafar. So we're starting with where the characters are at in the scenes preceding it. So here are some thoughts, Ken, and then we'll discuss. Kylo, we know, has solidified his power over the First Order. He made a connection to Rey, but in his mind, she rejected him. And as we learn later in this very film, he feels he can never even try to return to the light because he's failed his mother Leia and she would reject him. He himself has rejected or outright killed all of his parental figures, Han, Snoke, Luke. He has even symbolically smashed the helmet of his grandfather, Vader. And then he hears the voice of yet another authority figure of the past, Palpatine. So he marches off to find him. So at that point, given what Kylo's been through, what is he thinking or feeling as he lands on Exegol to confront yet another authority figure of the past?
I think he's pissed. I really do, to be blunt. My mom would not like me using that phrase. I think he's pissed off, and which is something I love because, you know, we're used to our Star Wars villains going after more power, and this, there is some of that in this scene, right? But I think he lands pissed. And you go to the crawl. Meanwhile, Supreme Leader Kylo Ren rages in search of the Phantom Emperor, determined to destroy any threat to his power. That's quite a start. You know, I finally have what I want. And now this, and by the way, this is the past, this damn past that I keep wanting to destroy. Cause I think that's the only way forward for me. This is enough's enough. And that's why I love the way that this opening sequence, and not to bring too much of the Mustafar stuff in, but just even there, it's the eye of Webbish Bog and all those things we've seen in concept art. Great. Loved it. Love the ideas, but I just like that. It's like Kylo, like, enough. I got to go do this because I got to go take care of this threat. And I'm mad.
Yeah. Great point. The Webbish Bog, I would love to see whatever exists of that. I love seeing the illustrations. I love reading about it. But there is this, he's on a mission. He is raging, which gives it this great energy. And yeah, I totally agree with you. I'm really glad that you pulled that quote from the crawl. I love that the crawl does just make the crawl makes it practical, as the crawl often does. The crawl hints at internal motivations, but a lot of times it's just externally, literally, what are they trying to do and why? And like, yeah, of course it's a threat to his power, but on a much more personal level, a part of his fall, a part of his trauma has been, you're named after the great Obi-Wan Ben Kenobi. Your father is this scoundrel who turned into a galactic hero and a famous racer. Your mother is the person who held the rebellion and now helps hold the New Republic together. Oh, and your uncle is, you know, the Jedi who saved the galaxy. And oh, even if you want to turn to the dark side, your grandfather is the most powerful Sith that ever existed. Oh, and Snoke, he kind of lied to you and he has power over you and he calls you a child, and like everything has been, can I just be who I want to be? Can I get out from under these shadows of the past? And he has gone to such work to literally kill the past. And here comes this other voice basically disrupting the path. Like I think he's in between the movies. He's in this really dark place where he's like, you know, I killed my past. Didn't entirely satisfy me. I'm still lonely. I wanted Rey to be with me. She rejected me. So just rage, kill, take. I'm on my path. This is who I was meant to be. Nothing disrupt me. And then in some ways, the worst thing to possibly disrupt him, an even more powerful, even more insurmountable voice from the past going, but actually, let me drag you back to that psychological hell you've been in for a super long time. Can you overcome that? So I think he's just marching in there going, I really meant it when I said kill the past. I really don't want to re-examine the path I've been on. I want to stay on the path I'm on.
Yeah, and if you re-examine it, you might grow. He doesn't want to grow. He's conquesting, right? Right. And to finish a thought I started a bit earlier, just like, I think we're used to, villain wants power. Villain's going to get it. He's going to work with those. He's going to scheme. He's going to dream. And this to me is a different tone. Like we said, like we've been explaining here, just the anger, the rage, the enough's enough. And it reads on Adam Driver's face. And I've always kind of liked this beginning because of that. It's a little tweak on it for me.
Yeah, I think it's a great tweak because I think it combines the just big operatic, somebody might try to take your power, and it combines it with a really small, someone might want you to talk about your feelings. He doesn't want to do either of those things, you know?
Yeah. And we always say that, you know, episode 9 is in communication with all the other films that came before it. And this just directly is communicating with that destroy the past Kylo. It's talking to that, like, oh, okay, well, the past is here. What are you going to do with it?
Kill it. Yep. Yeah, at least try. So then we've got Palpatine's perspective. He has, of course, been sort of trapped for decades, locked down here in his bowels of this Sith temple. He has been whispering to Kylo, puppeteering Snoke, and rotting in various clone bodies. And now he has announced his existence to the galaxy. And Kylo, the heir of Vader, a Skywalker, is finally marching toward him. What do you think old Sheev is thinking and feeling as he senses Kylo's marching down here?
I think this is a classic Sheev overconfidence. And, you know, at some point, especially during the reviews of Rise of Skywalker, same mood, you touch upon the fact that, you know, Palpatine is, there's no Phantom Menace going on, really. He has announced it. I'm here. I'm back. My long held plan, I finally can move the pieces forward again. It's a different feel. He's waited long enough. There's no, I'm not going to run for office. I'm not going to do anything. I am back. I am Sheev and I am Sith. And I think that all to me, he is classically confident in that Sheev way when Kylo walks in.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think he is feeling just hateful glee. Yeah, he has been waiting for this moment for a long time. He worked on Anakin for a long time in the prequel era. He tried to turn Luke quickly. It didn't work. So he has been whispering to Ben for a long time. He's been manipulating him face to face through Snoke as a puppet. However exactly that puppet worked, it's still Palpatine's manipulations. So he's been working on Ben for a long time. And he's ready. The ships are ready. This is going to be the payoff. If everything works the way he wants, the way Palpatine wants, he's very close to getting this, possessing this new body. And I also think he's getting so very close to revenge, because it's not just his revenge on the galaxy, right, that he threatens in his broadcast. It's also personal for him. It's galactic and personal, because this is, it's not just like, hey, great, there's a strong young Force user, really connected, great, a new chosen one, great. This is the grandson of Anakin, the nephew of Luke, the son of the Princess of Alderaan, that he can take his personal revenge on this new Skywalker, I think is something that just gives him hateful glee. And I love that he's not the Phantom Menace. It really changes a lot in Rise of Skywalker for me, that he is the blatant menace, that he is saying, I'm not gonna, kind of have a Senate or, have anyone to hide behind at all. I am just going to shout, we are the Sith, and I'm going to take the galaxy, and anybody who opposes me is going to die. So I think this is his moment of like, this is the beginning of no more hiding for me.
Yes. Which I ties into something that's popped up a couple times recently here, of the idea that this is not defeating the Sith, but defending from the Sith. You know, you've mentioned that before, even regarding the First Order. It's like, hello, we're back. I'm here. And what are you going to do about it? But they're not on the inside. I mean, First Order, a little different, but you know what I mean? Like, it's not the ruling government for years, for decades. And this cloaked villain, that he's like, hello, I'm here, we're coming to get you. And that sets the tone too.
Yeah. Just screaming out to the galaxy, I'm coming and you're in trouble. So with that, the scene itself begins. Kylo lands on Exegol. We see the inverted pyramid temple. We see and hear the screeching, unnatural lighting, the barren, broken earth. Kylo marches in, igniting his unstable saber. What do you like just right away when you see this setting? How does it set the scene for you, the mood, just the external vision of Exegol in the temple?
I'm sorry, it's so good. I want Exegol art. I don't know if there's, we want our happy, scrappy, joyful Star Wars art. You know, I want Luke at the Twin Suns. I want Chirpa staring out at Bright Tree Village. That's the art I want. I also want some of this. I love the visuals here. Just love it. And the very first time watching it, just like blown, like, oh God, we are going into some different places than we've gone on big screen stuff in Star Wars. You know what I mean? Mustafar has the vibe, the mood, but it's like it's a functional planet, right?
Yeah. You know,
there's some droids doing some work there. There's some Mustafarians doing some work. This, the moment he's walking in there, that lightsaber ignited, kind of almost dragging behind him on that long shot. I just love it. And the decision to make, like, even those huge statues, and you look in that documentary and they were like, oh, they were going to be smaller. And then we decided, let's make them giant so the humans feel like ants. It's just one of those simple, you don't need to overthink it. It just works exactly as intended. We are overwhelmed. We feel small in the grand scheme of things. This is literally the dark history of the galaxy. It's crushing down on us. And the idea that he's literally descending into the pit, that age old kind of part of the mythical journey. It just all works for me. I love this sequence because of that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I really love the 1-2 punch of it, of seeing everything you're describing, like from the outside. Like, we've seen this on smaller screen stuff with, we've seen scary temples, on Malachor and Moriband and in Clone Wars and Rebels. But this is really getting to see it on the big screen and to go with this different version of Desolate. Mustafar is like one of the most evil worlds we saw. And that was, I think Mustafar is really this symbol of like being in constant rage and constant transformation with the earth is constantly roiling. And it's a different mood with this big inverted temple that gives you this like just a sense of pressure, like everything's literally pointing downward into the pit. That lightning is, the sound of it is one of my favorite bits of sound design in all of Star Wars, because it just, it sounds close to lightning, but unnatural. It's screeching. It's like the environment is always, screaming is really powerful. And the lightning right away to me has this is where like the imagery matters to me, of not just being like an homage and like lightning's scary, great, but like lightning is all established here. And eventually we get down to the lab. And when you combine lightning and lab, you're really touching into Frankenstein territory. That's like the cultural signifiers that we know of Frankenstein. You know, Mary Shelley's book, arguably the beginning of science fiction itself as an idea in literature, but just from, the famous Universal movie of Frankenstein, the lightning and the lab equipment, those really go together to tell this very Star Wars related story to me, of this unholy combination of raging nature with the lightning and then the sort of unholy science. You establish that lightning outside, you get that old, you get that mythic, you get that nature, the world itself is in rage at what's happening here. And it's that great setup for kind of completing the other half of the Frankenstein picture of just the combination between the organic and the mechanical working together to make something monstrous.
The Frankenstein's monster stuff is a great pull and a simple pull in saying that with such, sometimes I just love that it's right here. You're seeing it. And then sometimes it's unnatural. There's some construction going on, right? Something's being built or a creature's being built. It all that's on purpose and should make you feel a certain way and derive answers from that. If you need answers, if you need cut and dry answers of what's happening, that's what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And definitely we'll talk more about that, because Palpatine and the lab equipment all have lots to say. But I think for me, it's important because it's not just referencing Frankenstein because Frankenstein's a cool horror movie. The themes, the ideas of Frankenstein is man meant to play God? And that immediately plays into, is what's happening here acceptable? Is what's happening here natural? And it's a great thing to tee up the arguments that Palpatine himself is going to make.
Right.
And then once we go inside, I love what you're saying about the statues. Great pull on those quotes about, should we make them bigger? Yeah, bigger, bigger. In that one shot where, raging Kylo, the leader, supreme leader, the First Order, heir to darkness. This is a wee tiny little guy.
Yeah.
It works great. I love the creepy floating stone disc he descends on. And then the massive statues of the Sith Lords are holding these like scepter-like staffs. And they're only really revealed from these other flashes of lightning. And the other thing I liked about that, but beyond the just makes you feel tiny, this is a place of power. It is so evocative of antiquity, of this idea of the past. So it's not just like the power of the Sith. And the sort of the creepiness of kind of old unknowable stuff. It's the sheer weight of antiquity, of the thing that Kylo is the raging against the most is the past. Well, these are like symbols of a past that can't be killed, a past that is so huge and so powerful, it will always just burst out of the earth with its fingers clawing for the present. And that is, you know, without being super explicit, it ties into why, you know, a lot of horror stories emerged from exploration of the pyramids in Egypt and from the kind of romantic versions of the pharaohs and this idea of these incredibly powerful people from the past entombed, and they were so worshipped that there were these massive statues of this. And I think as humans, we have this natural anxiety with if the past, something so old, so powerful, that it must still be alive, like that we kind of can't grapple with the fact that that was a culture and that was a tomb. On one hand, we know that. On the other hand, like, but it's so big. How can they not kind of somehow still be alive? And then we make stories constantly about that anxiety of, can something so powerful from the past be dead?
I'm thinking of like, is this Stargate Fifth Element? What do we got here? We got a lot of stuff going into this. And to add to, you know, Kylo's journey, not just crushing down on him, and this idea that maybe he can't escape it. The past is he's going down to meet it now, but it's also been calling to him here, and he has to go confront it. That's again, just every visual connects to that idea of it's here, the past, everything, like you said, is in front of you. You can't bury it.
Yeah. Too big, too powerful for you to just kill. Small Kylo is walking among the statues, and from somewhere we hear Palpatine speak. He says, "At last, Snoke trained you well." Kylo responds, "I killed Snoke, I'll kill you." And Palpatine coos, "My boy, I made Snoke." And then follows up with, "I have been every voice, and then as Snoke, you have ever heard, as Vader inside your head." And then for fun, a little Vader breathing. How does this revelation, the way Palpatine announces himself and the information that he gives him, how does that revelation affect Kylo, and how do you think Palpatine wants it to affect him?
Great. I've been watching this all morning, studying Adam Driver's eyes and trying to pick up on what he is choosing to convey in this scene. And it's still anger, a lot of anger, a flash of doubt, maybe confusion. He was duped. How did he allow himself? I don't know. I'm putting a lot of that in there. You know what I mean? Like I've been studying his face. I see it as losing a little bit. A little bit of his emotional balance, or his emotions are unbalanced right in this moment. Because I think he, especially with the voices, which I love that little sequence. I love that little bit. He's been living a lie. The dark side lied to him. And does that matter to him? I don't know. Is he thinking, did I kill my father for this, for a lie? Did I have to separate from my mother for this, for a lie? What do I believe in? I think all of that can kind of come in that moment. I think overall, he steps forward still pissed, and he's still angry. And I don't think he's over here going, why did I do that? But you see the voices particularly. I think it's effective to me of just like, oh yeah, everything, every decision you made, and you made some bad ones and you made some tough ones and they still aren't working. And that's what I'm going to here too. It's like none of that worked because you're down here with a big empty hole in your soul. And I did that. I duped you. I got you. I think I feel that from Kylo in that moment.
Yeah. I love what you're saying about a flash. Cause I think he does, he holds on to the rage, and there is he keeps that rage cause it's honest. But I think there is that moment of doubt, because the information is just, it instantly robs Kylo of a bunch of power. One, it says you made some of these decisions that you made in life through manipulation, through me whispering in your head, and you thought it was Snoke, but you weren't even talking to the person that you thought you were talking to. So that would make you instantly doubt your choices. And also, you eventually got angry and didn't want to be controlled by Snoke anymore. So you killed him and you pat yourself on the back for that. It makes you feel powerful. And in fact, you didn't do anything. You killed a puppet and I'm still here. It just kind of instantly robs him of power. And I think you're so right of he has that tiny flash of, okay, well, I'm going to have to deal with all that. But right now, stay stay on focus. Kill, kill, kill.
Yeah, look, he still did those things and he still took those steps. There's still a lot there. But what you and I are saying here is just like you are now on shaky ground. And even the decisions, even if some of the decisions you made very much on your own, and to me, maybe killing Snoke was part of that. But like you made them. Yes, you made them. But like you can't even be sure of what is true at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what's so great is Kylo, for as committed as the path he's on, he's like, I did it. I found the strength. I killed my father. I'm haunted by it, but I did it. And I didn't want to listen to Snoke anymore, so I killed him. I didn't, you know, want to be in the shadow of Vader, so I smashed that helmet. And then Palpatine basically goes like, yeah, but actually, I'm the one who encouraged you to kill your father and told you that was the only way you'd become who you were. I was the one who convinced you to smash that helmet. And, you didn't kill Snoke at all. So your list of accomplishments that you're holding on to, you didn't do any of them.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which sucks for Kylo. What do you think? Obviously, he wants to have that effect on Kylo, but what other sort of like manipulation do you think is Palpatine doing? What is he hoping to get in this moment out of Kylo?
I think all those dark side things that trip you up, you know, the fear, the anger, which hopefully is the suffering. I think all of it. I think you can't really move off that playbook. You know what I mean? And I wonder too, hear me out here too, just the opposite side of this up until this point is Rey making actual decisions, you know?
Mm.
And does that factor, and this is not totally in story. I'm not even worried about what Adam Driver did in the scene. And now I'm just wondering as a fan inside the story, is there also some kind of this like Kylo, because Palpatine knows what he's going to say, right? He knows what the reveal is at the end. We're going to talk about that. But like, is he building up to that too? Like, I controlled everything you did. The girl kind of did stuff on her own. Uh-oh. How you feel about that? Like, I'm just, all that's on in play for me as a fan taken in this scene in this moment.
Yeah. I think that's a great connection that a lot of what Kylo has been haunted by is being trapped in this role of destiny and you know, monitored and wanted and judged by all these authority figures. And he tries to break Rey in The Last Jedi by saying you're no one, but it is really fun to think of how much does Kylo just wish he was no one right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's a great thing to explore. How much is a little bit of jealousy. He certainly wants Rey to be with him so he doesn't feel alone. And he wants Rey to break like he breaks. So he feels like it would happen to anybody. It was destined to happen. It wasn't his choice. But that's a great wrinkle to be like, I wish I was a no one scavenger with lots of power.
Don't we all?
Yeah. Just as a big Palpatine fan, I just love that he just starts off with the absolute classics. He's playing, you know, mean grandpa authority figure the way he says, my boy. It's so friendly and also so possessive. And then it's just classic manipulation of he gives a compliment and then immediately takes it away. He says, you know, Snoke trained you well, kind of complimenting how powerful he feels Kylo is as he's walking up. But then he immediately takes it all away by saying, but, you know, it was all a parlor game and you didn't actually do anything, but you're really powerful, but you didn't make any of your own choices. And I think it's this just very frightening, classic abusive, like, I want to make you hate me and need me. I want you to resent me. And then I also want you to feel like you can't possibly move forward without me telling you what's what.
Mm-hmm. And what he has to offer, which we're going to discuss too, but yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. Yes. Such a good, creepy, mean grandpa. Anyway, Kylo rounds the corner and we see the actual lab of horror, big pieces of machinery, bubbling vats, hunched and bandage wrapped cultists plugging in hoses and rods. And then we see the double vat of Snoke floating in yellow fluid, one straight up and one upside down. How do you feel about the vats of Snoke? Do you think Palpatine is making more? Are these his backup copies on his evil hard drive? What do you make of the Snoke vats?
This is, I love this, but also it might be, I don't even want to say least favorite part of the sequence to me, because I love this sequence so much, but every time I kind of see it, I kind of chuckle, which I don't know, maybe Palpatine enjoys a good joke too of your former boss. Look at that. Like three of them. I haven't even made the robes yet. And I think they're leftover Snokes that you can use for a stew. It's a Snoke broth being built there.
Yeah. I think you're right. There is a lot in this scene that is balancing. It is sharing a lot of information, right? And then, as we'll talk about, for a lot of people, not enough information or the right information. It's sharing a lot of information, but it is also an emotional scene between Kylo and Palpatine. And that there's definitely the, Palpatine says, "I made Snoke." And then this scene, the vat of Snoke floating in what looks like mellow yellow soda from the 80s. It really enforces he literally made him in some way. He was a clone or he's a puppet in some way. But I also feel like it does work on an emotional level of that big bad, that impossible authority figure that you thought you could never get out of the shadow of, that you're so proud of killing. Here's two more. Like, congrats, So I think there is, even though we don't have like a shot of Kylo seeing them and reacting per se, it feels to me like it's theater for Kylo of like, Palpatine knows he's coming. And he says to all of his, evil Igors and Renfields from his Universal Horror movie who are keeping him alive, leave a couple of Snokes in the tank, because that will really bother Kylo.
A couple Snokes in the tank. Come
leave
on.
A couple over. Snokes in the tank. any other thoughts for you? I kind of went off a little bit on the lab itself, but did you have any thoughts on seeing the lab?
I love going back to like the first couple of viewings, right? The first one, I almost throw out, because it's just like, new Star Wars. I usually spend the first 10 minutes of a Star Wars movie going, until I can really figure it out. But I love it. It is something, again, on screen. I think in Clone Wars, we've seen a lot more of this kind of stuff, a little bit in Rebels and Mortis and World Beats Worlds, but even just on other, just kind of weird, wonderfully bizarre Star Wars things. We don't see a ton of it on the big screen. And again, Mustafar, yes, but it was different. It was way different. Like I said, it was functional. We are somewhere we've never been before. And it just had that feeling when he turns that corner. I think there's a lot of answers. But I think when he turns the corner, I was as wonderfully confused as he was in that moment. Like, whoa, what's going on?
Yeah. And I think for me, there's the explicit Frankenstein connection that is sort of the original on-screen mad scientist laboratory, or, one of the earliest and most famous, most iconic. But I think there's a lot about it that's just, I use that term pulpy a lot, because there's so many influences on Star Wars of this early genre storytelling, that some, from the adventure serial, but some from literal pulp magazines in paperbacks, which were meant to be titillating. So they would have bright, lurid colors, exactly like that yellow of Snoke's tank. And they would have, strange, creepy, unknowable machinery that kind of expressed an anxiety in those eras about the fast movement of technology, of like, is this a good idea? Is it worth it? And like, I just see all of that stew of elements that went into Star Wars. And here is in the last chapter of the Skywalker saga, really playing with this specific part of it. And I just love it aesthetically.
We need that playset. We've talked about that before, but we need that playset.
Oh yeah. The Palpatine's lab.
Oh yeah. With real bubbling Snoke action.
Oh my God. Yeah. You can blow on it and make the Snoke vat bubble. I'd love it.
Kid, make your own Snoke. And it comes like gloop out of the gloop.
You can make his vat bubble. Yeah. Oh man. I love it. So Palpatine continues his speech and says, "The First Order was just the beginning. I will give you so much more." And Kylo responds, "You'll die first." Palpatine is unfazed, saying, I've died before. Is that an underexamined line? What does it mean to you that Palpatine himself says he died?
First, I love that line and I love that delivery. I love it. I'm sorry. Throw Sith stones at me because I'm positive here. I just love that line. I think it's underexamined. I think it's forgotten by those that never wanted to hear it, Joseph, if we want to go that direction. And we always talk about not everything a character says is 100% fact. It's also the point of view. But there's a lot of things Palpatine's just saying here or things we're seeing in the scene that are just, they are face value. It doesn't mean you can't dig into it. Even the First Order is just beginning. Here I am, a Ray Sloan fan going, well, what does that mean for Ray Sloan? Well, what does it mean for the stories I've read? I don't think it changes any of that because those are still people, following a contingency plan or building something on their own. And there's a lot of great stories. And, I say great in the formation of the First Order, but you know what I mean? Like there's powerful things, Aiden Versio, her father, all those kind of things. All those things still stand for me. It isn't just washing away that history. But this is him saying it. I died. I was no more. My essence was thrown over. We learned some of those facts later on. And again, we'll talk about how much or how little was revealed here, but to me, this is the big fact. I died. That was done. I was over. This is something new and we're not quite there yet.
Yeah.
Look at my bubbling vats. We're not quite there.
Yeah. I love your thoughts on the First Order. The First Order was just the beginning. Yeah. That doesn't lessen any of the First Order storytelling to me because, this has happened a lot where huge swaths of storytelling that we're invested in that matter to characters, just ultimately people dancing on the end of Palpatine's strings. That's the entire Clone Wars animated series is people mm-hmm. dancing to the strings of his manipulation. So great point that doesn't lessen the First Order for me. And then for the, I've died before. I love how casual it is as Sheev lines go. So I think it has this great emotional manipulation of kid. There's so much you don't know, my boy. It's nice that you think you understand the dark side, but there's so much you don't know. It's got that aspect of it. But I read it as true. I read it as, as you were saying, we learn in the novelization that is he's fallen down the shaft of the Death Star 2. He has his contingency plan and he throws his awareness, his soul, his dark soul into a rotting clone. So we have that information, but from this line, I get the sense that it was death to him. He experienced pain. He experienced, horror in that this is real to him. And I don't picture it from this line. When he says, I have died before, I don't picture it as like he threw his essence into a perfect clone. And then it was like, hey, everybody, here's a bunch of orders. I think it was incredibly painful, incredibly disorienting. His master plan fell apart and he lands in a body that is not his own, that it can't contain him, and it's hell.
Yeah, I don't see it as like, it's been a while, but like, when a Cylon dies, Trisha Helfer doesn't just die and just all of a sudden reemerge from a Cylon bath,
Yeah.
And even that painful process, I think he is dead and they're working as we find out, they're working to try to make this go and it's not going well. So I don't think he just suddenly eyes pop up like, oh, cool. Hey, what's up? Are you ready to start this? I think he's in nothingness and who knows what he's seen on the other side. I think there's a lot going on and that to your point of pain and whatever, but he felt this was a death.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's another point where the film is telling you, that in my opinion, the victory of Anakin and Luke was a victory. He was dead. From a certain point of view and not threatening the galaxy anymore.
Yeah. We've had some conversations about that recently or what the battle was and how it is different, but yes, I'm fully on board with that one.
Excellent. Okay. So he has died before, so we shall move on. Kylo seems to notice where the voice is coming from. And as both Kylo and the camera itself rounds the corner, we see the shadowy figure of Palpatine. He says the dark side of the Force is a pathway to many abilities, some considered to be unnatural. Some considered to be unnatural. Flashes of lightning, and we see Sheev's wrinkled, milky-eyed face. So this line obviously has meaning for audiences, but in the world of the story, what does it mean that Palpatine is quoting himself?
I think he's again, I say this goes to a little bit of confidence. But it's what am I trying to say? It's always what his end game was, or his bigger game, not his end game, his bigger game, the pursuit of this stuff. Think of that little, we all love that line. And J.J. Abrams was going into this movie. He was like, I love that opera scene. Hint, hint. I love a little bit later on where he is, he says to, I didn't write the quote down, but I beg you, use my power, Anakin.
Yeah.
Hold him now. It's manipulation for Anakin in that scene, Padme and all that kind of stuff. It's that, but there's a truth I've always taken from Sheev in that moment, that he's like, we can defeat death. Like, I need to do this too. I don't want to die. Don't want to let go. That is the Sith way. It's not the Jedi peacefully transitioning to the next phase. He's always had that in him. And that might be the center of what Palpatine, Sheev, not Sidious or anything, but Sheev as a kid, whatever made him switch. It's this fear of letting go, the fear of the unknown, which is the fear Anakin has, the fear Yoda sees in him, you know, that it all ties to that to me. And so for him, this is, it's probably something he says to people are probably like, yeah, yeah, yeah. He's like, hey, you know, the dark side is the path. They're like, yeah, 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 we get it, Chief. But it's been in him. You know what I mean? Like, this is the driving force. So, and he's been not waiting to say it in some comical sense, but this is that path.
Yeah.
And he feels maybe I finally can defeat death. That's all I want to do, because I don't want to die. I don't want to go to the next phase. And then I kind of touched that, and now I'm even more driven. This is my moment. This is everything I turned Sith for.
Yeah. I really like that, that interpretation. That's some great headcanon in terms of like his childhood and what broke him, what fears drove him to the dark side. And I know we've got some stuff in the Plagueis novel, and that stuff's all great. It's not canon, so eventually maybe we'd get a different canon story. But I love this idea, because what I was thinking about, you know, this phrase, why does he say this phrase? Because it's not like Kylo, you know, knows that that's something he said to Anakin as well. So right. I almost took it as like, is this what Plagueis said to him to hook him? You know, if he's his kid and he's been around death, or he's lost loved ones and he's hungry for power and afraid of death and never wants to die himself. And like when Plagueis came to him, is that what Plagueis said? The dark side of the Force is a pathway to many abilities some consider to be unnatural. Because it's got this sense of like that specific phrase is like a mantra, like it has power to him, you know, that it matters to Sheev himself. So I love what you're saying of this obsession. We know he wants to live forever so he can continue to have power and control everything. But to make it that personal of like, I have touched death. I don't want to die. I want to stay here on this plane, controlling everything. In the dark side of the Force is the path to that.
Yeah, I will burn it all down to stay alive.
Yeah, so I kind of like the headcanon that it is close to his heart. It's something that Plagueis told to him. But I also just like it from the perspective of it's a manipulation both times, that we hear it as the audience, right? When he says it to Anakin, it's this hope of like, well, you know, the dark side is just a different way of looking at the Force. And, you know, some judgmental people like the Jedi might think that's unnatural, but it's just the other side of the equation. It's not actually unnatural. Some consider it unnatural. And maybe that could be a way that we could save your young, heroic, beautiful, you know, wife who has just a heart of gold. And that's what he's selling to Anakin. Here he's selling to Kylo just that, hey, the dark side of the Force is this endless power. It's what you're drawn to. It's what you want more of. You can accomplish anything with the dark side. So it's a manipulation both times. But I love that in Revenge of the Sith, it's like he's selling this rosy picture of like, Palpatine or Padme could die during childbirth and you could like touch her forehead and she would come back to life. And the truth of it is, here's what it actually looks like. you know, mm-hmm. to be stuck in a rotting clone of your body with parts of you falling off, hanging from a hook in a lab of horrors. That's what Palpatine was actually offering Anakin mm-hmm. to save Padme. So to get to see, like, in this movie, the truth of what he was selling back in Revenge of the Sith is really great.
It's kind of one of these time-honored traditions in a lot of these kind of big fantasy stories. You know, only death can pay for life. Daenerys Targaryen fell for that. Well, Khal Drogo was alive. After that, not what she bargained for. That's the lesson. That's the lessons that are there for the dark side kind of pursuits. So yeah, that tracks for me too as well.
Yeah. So we'll get right into it. Does this line work for you as part of the explanation of how Palpatine returned, or for you, does it? I know for a lot of people and want to have respect for people who feel strongly this way. Does it feel too hand wavy?
No, I think you kind of. Oh, like yeah, sorry. A different. I started down the path of a different hand wave, like waving, like here it is, here's the answer. No, like just brushes over it. I totally understand where that comes from. I totally get it. I think especially in my early reviews, particularly the Last Jedi Council show we did was a review of this movie, and I think I'd like, hey, cool. I don't know all the answers yet, and I do want them. I'm a fan who wants to see it and feel it later on. Don't need it every beat during the movie I'm watching, but yeah, I don't fault anyone at all. I don't fault anyone for disagreeing, you know, or having different interpretations of scenes and stories at all, but just like, I get it. You know what I mean? I get it. And there's some stuff, bigger Palpatine stuff that didn't work for me early on with Aftermath stuff where you remember you and I had a conversation about it of just like, I love focusing on Palpatine as the leader of the Empire, bad guy, dark side guy, wants some power. And I focused on the war, and I didn't fully always love the idea that Palpatine behind closed doors was more concerned about other things, but then it really works, you know, like then it, going back to even what we're talking about, I love the idea of this 10-year-old Sheev. Death touches him, touches his life, and he doesn't want that to experience that. And therefore, the only way he can fix that is by absolutely conquering everything and controlling everything so that he can stay alive, and it all leads to that. So that works for me as the answer on that level.
Yeah, yeah. I think, not surprisingly, we are in agreement. I really do get that people wanted more explanation, clearer explanation. We got more stuff in the novelization, and that was obviously kind of a storm on social media of just seeing, you know, the article titles and having that kind of discussion. But I really get that for a lot of people, it was a distraction, that not understanding where Palpatine, how Palpatine came back, how he survived, and not having that be clear enough was a distraction from enjoying the rest of the movie, because they're like, wait, what's the deal? Or I feel like you didn't explain that enough, and now I'm already kind of crossing my arms at the movie. So I really get that as a criticism and respect that. For myself, though, I think it might just be a difference in taste of I'm seeing everything I need on screen. Like, I'm glad that we got in the novelization, like, oh, he threw his essence. Great. Before that, I had the headcanon of like his essence was burned into a piece of the wreckage, and these cultists went and got it and, you know, peeled his soul out and put it in a, you know, diseased body, or this was what was left of his body and they stitched it back together. Like, that part of it to me isn't as much of a concern as what is being said visually, aesthetically, thematically, that Palpatine wants to cling to life in an unnatural way. In everything I'm seeing is this is the classic story, the classic, you know, human anxiety about hanging on to life. Like you were saying, of, you know, everybody wants, we have so many stories of, oh yeah, no, you can live past death, but you're not going to like what comes back. And this is the picture of it. It is an unnatural marriage of science and natural. The force is natural, but this feels like some perversion of it. And it's the classic Frankenstein story of you playing with something that isn't natural. And this is what you get, a rotting, evil soul that is too evil for the body. That you can't even contain it. And it's hanging from a hook, and it's a horror show. And that, like, you came back through the means of science and unnatural magic, and this is the result. Just makes so much emotional storytelling sense to me.
Yeah, and the fact that you got this group, the Sith Eternal, who just they need this power, they need this leader, they can't do it on their own, and they've held some beliefs here, and that's all kind of wrapped up into it, and yeah, I always felt the answers are there. Again, if you ask the why, you and I just pound people over the head with that. I'm sure it gets annoying sometimes. Sorry, we hit you so hard on the heads, but I can't move away from that, Joseph. Of just like ask the why. Yes, I know there's a character literally says somehow he came back. I totally get that. But why did he come back? And everything's already there. It's in the previous movies. This is communicating with Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, we'll continue discussing the scene, and I think dig down into the whys that make sense for us, and see where we find ourselves. Got one more thing I want to talk about, and then we're going to take a quick break. So, as the scene continues, Kylo whips his blade to Palpatine's face. We get that great shot of the tip of the red blade and Palpatine's calm face. And Kylo asks, what could you give me? And Palpatine responds, everything. Why is that such a good hook for Kylo?
It's the dark side, baby. They want everything. But here's the thing. It's similar to what this kind of headcanon we're building around young Sheev goes dark. If Kylo has everything, he doesn't have to face what he lost and took away from himself. He doesn't have to face it. No one's going to question him. No one's going to fight him. The deep-seated, you know, Rey says, you're haunted by what you did to your father. He's haunted by the fact that he can't return to his mother. Those things are there, and they're weighing on him, and it destroys him. And, hey, he never has to face that again if he's the one sitting on the throne. It's everything. Everything will be what heals him in his mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I just love it because I think it is so in line as you're describing it as the trap of the Sith, the trap of the dark side. In a way, it's almost like Palpatine is manipulating him, but he's also like finishing the manipulation of somebody who is far down the road of the dark side. So like, it feels like Palpatine Sidious is this master. The dark side is like, look, we've both been there, kid. I know exactly what you want. You want everything. You want, as you yourself screamed, more. You mm-hmm. want, as I screamed, unlimited power. This is the trap of the Sith. You rip yourself apart trying to get things. It's no matter how much you get, it's not satisfying. So you just keep trying to get more. And in fact, that cycle of rage that you don't have enough is what keeps you constantly grasping for more. And we live with this illusion that eventually we will have enough. And what could possibly be enough? Everything.
Everything.
Everything. So on that fun, light note, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, 4Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, 4Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138. Hey, 4Center fans, don't forget 4Center is on YouTube. Head over there to catch up with our new show, Star Wars Show and Tell. Joseph, Jennifer, Ken, and special guests sit down and share favorite items from their own Star Wars memorabilia collections. Plus, there's the In Memoriam video series, encore presentations of Databank Brawl, and special programming all there for you, and more shows on the way. It's 4Center on YouTube. Check it out.
We are back to finish our discussion of Palpatine's creepy, spooky Halloween time lab of horror. We're going through this scene, having some fun, making up some headcanon for Palpatine's youth, and wrestling with the themes, the aesthetics, and kind of the whys of the scene. So as we continue down the scene, Palpatine raises his hands. We see they're broken and stitched together with bones sticking out. We see whatever's going on with his body. It's not great. He continues this idea of everything by saying a new empire. There's a little bit of a lightning crackling between his broken fingers, and then many, many Sith Star Destroyers erupt from the surface of Exegol and rise into the lightning-filled sky as a slow Imperial march plays. We also see the navigation tower that will be important later. For you, we've had this intimate, creepy scene in this lab of horrors in the basement of a Sith temple with a decaying body. And then we move to this big picture of technological terror. Is this a successful moment of horror for you? And if so, why?
It is in terms of the larger story. I think once you're just out of the gate fast, you know, here's where we're going. We're not wasting time. We're at Palpatine's door. I think you did need this. There's a part of me that's like, oh, I wonder if there was another beat, not necessarily with Kylo there or something, that like Palpatine gets a little bit more power and it's time to launch Star Destroyers. But that's the stakes need to be just raised right from the beginning. In this case, literally, right? So it does work. And I think some of maybe you're hearing from me is this was something that we saw in the trailers, at least a clip of it, right? And we saw the ships. And I was so excited about that. And I think right in this moment, I was like, oh, I bet we're going to get, oh, there they are. So I love that trailer. So this isn't a, give me a, you know, just a logo and that's all I need from a trailer conversation. I get it and I'll take it because this does work for me overall in the story. But there was a little part of me that's like, oh yeah, okay, it's that moment. All right. I get it.
Yeah. I think for me, it just really works on an emotional level because we've seen Palpatine manipulate people before. You know, he hooked Anakin on, but save your wife. And, you know, he hooked Luke on, but look, your friends are dying out there. Don't you want to strike me down? And I like seeing him manipulate somebody who is already so far down the path of the dark side saying, all you want is more. All you want is the absolute power to crush anyone who resists you. So you never have to doubt your own power. So you never have to look at your own problems. Here you go. Here is a means to just conquer everything. It's all these ships. And then it's like, you know, we talked a lot about where Kylo was at as he was marching towards trying to extinguish this voice from the past. And this is him basically saying, Palpatine saying, hey, I'll give you what you want, the means to your, victory and having everything. But it's literally the past that is not buried. It's literally these, you know, classic Star Destroyer designs. And they're literally bursting up from the earth. It's literally the past will not be buried.
It can't be. And it works on a practical level for Kylo too. They need the ships, right? And by the way, Palpatine is a flair for the dramatic going about through his life. He gets a good show. And he also gets the actual physical power of weapons and soldiers. And that's how he did what he did. He needed that. He wasn't just, you know, fighting Jedi in alleyways. He took it all over. And so he knows the value of that just on a pure strategy level and a pure numbers level. You need this. You really do need this. And Kylo knows that.
Yeah. So it absolutely does literally raise the stakes and literally raise the past from the ground. On the more practical side of it, do you think Palpatine physically made the ships rise with his hand with a little bit of lightning in his fingers, like sending a signal like a garage door opener? What do you make of what's physically happening there?
I do now. I see him as Palpatine himself being like the final wire needing to be connected, you know?
Yeah,
it's on. And the reason that works for me in terms of headcanon is because this isn't something that happened overnight. And the failed clones and the attempts and the time it took to get this. Also, this is the, we do learn, and I get it wasn't maybe put in the movie, but just, you know, we get that these are the children of the Sith Eternal, or even some of them themselves. And it's people out there going, nope, we still believe we're lighting a candle for this, this Sith Lord we loved. And so there's some practical stuff that works for me in the scene. But yeah, the idea that this is the moment. And maybe Kylo needed to be there. I don't know. Was Palpatine waiting? I don't know. That's, I have to fill out that page in my head canon, but literally that this was like the final, the batteries are in the opener. Let's do it. Press the button.
Yeah. And I agree. I understand the wanting all of the I's dotted and the T's crossed in terms of information. That's kind of, I think the way Star Wars often works is that kind of stuff, like, well, who built those ships? Where'd all those materials come from? Like, it's a planet full of cultists. They built them over decades. We get that information in other places. But, you know, watching the movie with that question erased, I think it's just great that we know a part of what he's been waiting for is for this fleet to be completed. So he has this technological terror, like the Death Star, a gun. He had one big gun he can point at the galaxy. Now he has hundreds, thousands of guns he can point at the galaxy. It's, the lack of imagination of evil. It's, you know, the same thing in a slightly different form. It's ready and Kylo's ready. So I love the idea that I'm getting there. I have all the pieces in place. I don't have to hide behind pretending to be, you know, just Sheev Palpatine. I am, you know, the Sith. I don't have to use Mos Amita to send a message for me. I get to shout to the galaxy, I'm the Sith, I'm back, and the fleet's ready. I'll bring that Skywalker boy that I've twisted into a pretzel, and then for theater, I will wait, and I will use my limited force powers and throw the switch, and boom, all those ships will pop up, you know, as a form of theater for this kid.
Yeah, and it worked. Look, that announcement, the dead speak, and you know, whatever you feel about the announcement, or that it appeared in a Fortnite game, but I don't know. It doesn't matter, but they were going to put it here. The announcement is kind of it's like the word came back to, you know, Palpatine. We're ready. We're almost there. Okay, announcement. And now I need him here on the manipulation level, what he's trying to do with Kylo, but also on the idea of if he launches the ships and they got a ton of them and they got and they're ready to go, he can't afford Kylo going, well, I've got a fleet myself at least, and who knows what else I'm working on, even though Palpatine's tapped into that a little bit. Maybe I get it, but like, and maybe Pride could report on him. I don't know. But you know what I mean? Like he can't afford Kylo fighting his fleet either, even though I know he has more. I'm just saying that to me works as well, where it's like, we're ready to go, but I need Kylo on my side. I need to show him what we've got. Otherwise, I might get mired down in him fighting me too. And I don't have time for that. I've waited 30 years.
Yeah. Yeah. For all his manipulations of Kylo, making Kylo feel weak, Kylo could still potentially be a threat, right? Palpatine himself is weakened. He operates from fear often. So yeah, I love what you're saying of like, I need to get, not only do I want to, you know, use him to control the galaxy, use him to do this ritual that we learn about at the end of the movie. And I'll claim that he gets to be the new emperor, but I'll possess him and it'll be great. He needs all that. But I love the idea that there's also like, I want to just make sure that he doesn't cause any little bump of trouble for me.
Yeah.
So Palpatine makes his offer. There's a big pan of all the ships lined up and he tells Kylo, the might of the final order will soon be ready. It will be yours if you do as I ask. Then we see Palpatine's pale face just spitting, kill the girl, end the Jedi, and become what your grandfather Vader could not. Why is Rey's death a priority for Palpatine? Why is that the sort of manipulation, the price that Kylo needs to pay in order to get the everything?
You know, one level, she's definitely a threat, right? But he doesn't need her. He needs what she has, is how I think we've always viewed that. And so she is the more powerful tool that he can get a hold of here. And I think there's some different ways it can go, but and Palpatine's always good at that. At least old Palpatine was. So that's as far as the Rey thing, that's why I think it's a priority for him.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, and I know that's another thing that people brought up, being unclear about what Palpatine's plan is. And my interpretation is, yeah, back in the day when he found out that one of his clones had offspring and maybe this girl had power, that, yeah, he sent Ochi of Bastoon and go find her and bring her to me. But it didn't work out. He would want Ben because he's great revenge to on Anakin and Luke to take Ben. And I think he's being sincere here of he wants Kylo. He's manipulated Kylo for so long. Kylo's pretty broken and he just needs him to take this last step by eliminating the Jedi. I think what he's saying is pretty, I think he's being honest for Palpatine of kill the girl and the Jedi, because Palpatine has this long fear of like, I am the most powerful thing in the galaxy, but if one Jedi survives, I'm frightened. Like, there's in Revenge of the Sith, there's a little bit of fear in his voice when he's like, the Jedi are relentless. Like, we have to wipe them out. Right. That's his first thing with Anakin. It's like the second that they find out, they're going to endlessly be coming after us. So just take them by surprise, kill them all. There's that fear. When you accept that Palpatine has been puppeteering Snoke, so much what happens in the first two movies is, you could just go about conquering the galaxy, but you're obsessed with Luke Skywalker. You're obsessed with your fear of Luke Skywalker. And this seems to me an extension of like, Skywalker's gone, but she's powerful. And I can't have even one Jedi, especially not a powerful one like her, running around. She's got to die. And I think by having Kylo kill her, that's Kylo cutting off any possibility of connection to anybody else, right? So if Kylo can do that, then he's totally in Palpatine's back pocket.
Yeah, and he's even a more powerful tool for him to use. Yeah, that's going back to, you know, what we say, old Sheev there back in the day. But it's like, there's, I think, a lot of points, you know, as much as he's in control, we've talked about how he can adjust on the fly when he's needed. And I think he is, Yeah, so go to the throne room, Return of the Jedi. Either Luke wipes out his father and I got him, or maybe Vader kills his son and we're good to go.
Threat's gone, yep.
Threat's gone. I'm good with either one. There's probably a preference, but let's do it. Because he's the one that's like, all right, so be it, Jedi. I'm going to kill you. We'll work on something else. So I think Palpatine's always aware of options, and he's got two great ones. And he doesn't even, I'm not even worried about the dyad or anything. He's just got two great options. There's one I prefer. I'll take whichever one I got.
Yeah, he didn't know anything about the dyad. If Kylo is correct in saying he doesn't know about that, and he's been working on Kylo for so long, and then at the last minute when the Princess of Alderaan ruins it by saving her son, he pivots to, it's got to be Rey. It's got to be Rey. And then goes through the greatest hits trying to turn her at the last minute.
That's another good point to this conversation. Like his just being upset at the Princess of Alderaan, messing up again, much like her mother did back in the day with his plans. Always a thorn in his side, always messing things up.
Yeah. And I love that beat. And I love the power of that of like, okay, well, I worked on this for decades turning him. And I just made the final sell to him to go kill the Jedi. And he was about to do exactly what Sheev asked. He was about to kill Rey, and Leia stopped him and Leia saved him, along with Han and Luke, arguably. The Vader taunt. I love that. And I feel like that's something that we haven't talked about as much. How does that Vader taunt affect Kylo, do you think, and become what your grandfather Vader could not?
I think too. I mean, we know Kylo was always afraid he'd come up short of being Vader, right? I mean, Rey tosses that in his face in Force Awakens. So right. That's up there too. He also worshiped him. All right. Right. And now two things. He's learned that, I don't know, it's like, wow, that celebrity I loved is it follows me on Instagram. I'm Vader. I got his helmet. I'm talking to my grandfather. I'm going to finish what he started. This is great. Oh, wait, that might not have been what I thought it was. And so there's a little bit of like his love of Vader has been insulted too as well here. But when you're afraid that you're not going to be as good as this person, and then you find out like, yeah, that wasn't even good enough. Can you get past that? Another attachment to the past. I think it's all those kind of things these Palpatine's playing on in Kylo right here.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it would have been powerful if this scene had come sometime, it was at the beginning of Last Jedi and Kylo was still fairly on the, I want to finish what my grandfather started. I have this anxiety that I will not be as powerful as Vader. But in The Last Jedi, he kind of moves beyond that, right? He smashes the helmet and he doesn't even want to be in the shadow of that authority figure, that parental figure. He just wants to be whoever he's meant to be, free entirely of the past. So I love that this taunt connects with where Kylo was when we met him. But then in this moment of the story, it's just putting Kylo back on his bullshit. Mm-hmm. It's like Kylo had kind of moved past this one particular part of the anxiety of not being able to get out of the shadow of all these other people. And Palpatine just expertly is like, hey, remember all that stuff you wrestled with? Remember that path you were trying to get off of? Maybe you should be right back there. Mm. Maybe you're so close. Maybe you should put the helmet back together. Maybe you should be Vader and be Vader even better than Vader could ever be. And won't that make you feel good?
That
line is just I like it anytime anybody says Vader, and I love how heir to Vader, all of it, and it's just so powerful to me of what it means for Kylo's journey and the complexity of what he is wrestling with, trying to escape the shadow of all of his authority figures, and it works on some level, because Kylo turns his lightsaber off. And Palpatine continues, you will rule all the galaxy as the new emperor. But beware, she is not who you think she is. Why is Palpatine telling Kylo that Rey is his heir? What's his angle there?
I think I look at more fear on Kylo's part. Like what he again, because he thought he knew that part of the story, right? And he knew some of it. So you don't know much. Again, you were duped, or you didn't have all the answers. Sorry, bub. And then just simply, it's more a threat to this pursuit of everything. And you talk about him, you know, maybe you need to wipe her out because that's one final connection here. And you'd be clear of all of it other than me, you know, and selling that to him. So it's starts with fear, which can turn on all those issues Yoda will warn you about, but a definite threat. Definite threat. And also maybe he, right in that moment, Kylo realizes on the depth chart, Palpatine probably views her a little higher. So you better remove that threat.
Yeah. I love what you're saying. I think it is a great culmination of like almost everything I've told you is information that you thought you had that you were wrong about. Here is yet another thing that you were wrong about, kid. So you need me. And then, yeah, I think there's different ways the story could go, but from Sheev's perspective, they all work out great for him. If Kylo learns that that Rey has the blood of the Emperor in her, that and she's a, you know, potential heir to the throne, that could make him angry and make him want to take her out even more. It's giving him motivation. But if he opens up to her, that's kind of works out well for Sheev in the way it's going in the middle of the film, which is that Kylo is really doubling down on his falling to the dark side because of this new information about Rey. That is like, it's fate, it's destiny. You know, we are born of this dark lineage, and no matter what we do, we can't escape it. That's how I feel about myself. And Rey, if you will break, I'll be able to prove to myself that, yeah, it was always fate, it was always destiny. And I think by giving Kylo this information, knowing that Kylo might, you know, resist, might play around with it, that even if he kind of tried to, you know, a partner with Rey again, it would be in a way that would further commit him to the dark side.
Mm, yeah. Excellent stuff about a little bit of that panic later on and why he just sees, you know, now he's given Rey the rest of the story, but it's like, this is, and you said there, but you know, you can't escape it. It cuts. So Kylo's like, this is my destiny. I don't need to apologize. I don't need to deal with it. I just want to conquer everything, and I don't have to, this is always supposed to be Rey. You can't escape it either. Let's not be responsible for our actions or our choices. Let's just step forward into destiny, almost misunderstanding destiny. Like you and I always talk about,
A version of destiny that doesn't lead you to a choice, but instead makes your choice for you.
Yeah. 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 And it's always like, I love that. Yeah. It all comes from that there too. Now, you know, the rest of the story, Kylo.
And, you know, as another insurance point, if Kylo reveals the truth to Rey, as he does, it sends Rey spinning too, and opens up, you know, a chink in her armor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. She's a smart one. Get that information back to her, and you got more problems too. Yeah.
Yeah. So as this scene ends, as the Palpatine's lab of horror ends, Kylo really takes the bait of this Rey talk and says, "Who is she?" And Palpatine's only answer is a creepy little smile as lightning flashes and thunder rumbles. How do you think the conversation continued after this?
I think he still spoke in Gothic riddles, and I think it was something like, "She is the heir to an immeasurable power." And Kylo says, "What power?" And Palpatine says, "My."
And just more tiny little bits of lightning from his fingers. I think that's all he can do right now. Yeah, I mean, I think if the scene continued, obviously I know the scene cuts off there because the narrative point of telling the story is for us to wonder and all that. But if it continued, I think, you know, we might have got the really straightforward exposition that some people wanted about, like, "I made many clones. Some of those clones were failures and I rejected them. And one failed clone had a child," you know, mm-hmm. Might have got some of that. I love the scene cutting off there because narratively it is just setting up, ooh, where's the rest of this story going? These are always stories about identity. The entire sequel trilogy, in my opinion, is about the new generation wrestling with the shadow of the past generation. So it sets all those things up. But also just being contained within this scene, this little drama, this little emotional manipulation and terror show between Kylo and Palpatine. This is the first time that Kylo does break a little bit, right? Because he just comes in and says, "I'll kill you. oh, you revealed that a bunch of things I thought were true or lies. There's a flash of doubt or concern in my face, but I cover it up. You know, I play along with all this information you're giving me. And this is the, even when he's saying, you know, what could you possibly give me? It's doubt. It's interrogation. Mm-hmm. It's like, there's nothing you could give me. By the time he gets to who is she, Palpatine's already in his head and broken him a little bit because he is finally going, all right, I walked in here just thinking I knew everything and I just needed to kill another old man, you know, who wants to usurp my glory. And now I realize I don't know things and I'm asking you, please Grandpa, you're right. I don't have enough. Please, Mean Grandpa, can you give me the information?
Yeah, what you said, he lowers his lightsaber. That's very key. You talk about, all right, I'm listening, you know, and it's not out of like, that's why this scene, going back to what I was explaining or trying to explain early on of just like, it isn't just Kylo Ren, big bad guy, wants more power, rule the world. Everybody wants to rule the world. It's an emotional drive. And so for him to, like you're saying, to kind of be like, he puts down that lightsaber like, great, let's team up. He's kind of like, what's happening? Maybe I don't know everything. I got to see how this plays out. And one of the follow-ups, what's one of the things he does immediately after this, right? Rebuilds that helmet. He's been sitting around with for a year. Because now I think he needs to hide more. He needs to go back a bit, whether he knows it or not. He's afraid. He's got threats. He wants more power to erase it all.
Yeah. And I mean, and I like the idea that he's like, all right, I'm still going to kill him. There's no way I'm going to follow a new master, because that's what Rey taunts him. Like, oh, are you following a new master? Like, no, I'm going to kill him. I'm going to take the throne. Palpatine has to know, of course, he's going to try some of that. They all do. They always do. They should. He'd be disappointed if he didn't.
Right.
But he still has Kylo because he's got that doubt. Kylo now knows that there's so much that he doesn't know, and he's going to have that doubt, and that's going to be, you know, a weakness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of final thoughts as we wrap up here. For you, we talk a lot about Star Wars being this great balance between the new and the old in the sequel trilogy, wrestling with that from it being kind of explicit themes, storylines, ideas. There's the sort of meta part of that where, you know, the opinions about the sequel trilogy in our real world really turn a lot on whether or not people think there's enough new ideas or there aren't enough of the old characters. A lot of it is the battle of the new and old. What is the balance of the old and the new in this scene for you? How does the combination work?
I think it works really well, especially from the sense of story-wise, Palpatine is the threat, as Leia says, always in the shadows, you know, behind it all. That just, you know, and could it have been someone else? Could you know, Snoke Prime, or could have been Snoke? It could have been. I'm a sucker for this means a lot, man. It's the main event. The bad guy, the big bad, came back in a way that is disturbing and unnatural, and that factors in the story. But also, what does it say? You talk about meta, like we talk about sequel trilogy, very much passing things on to the next generation. Han, you know, here Rey, here's the blaster. You know, Leia recognizing new leaders need to emerge. Luke Skywalker does that as well. And here's Palpatine coming back and going, no, my story, still mine. It's just that works for me on that level too. And that's why new and old at play, at war in this scene more than
that. Yeah, I love what you're saying. Yeah, because there is that the heroes are desperately saying, my time has passed or is soon going to, please, will you take up the saber? Will you take up the leadership? You know? And yeah, for Palpatine to be going like, I will give you all this stuff so I can eventually possess your body.
Yeah, wipe you away. I don't want any of the new around.
That's a great intersection of the old and the new. And then just the aesthetics of the scene. I feel like this scene, even for people who didn't like the movie, many of the people that I talked to enjoyed this scene. I'm not saying all. I'm just saying, you know, friends I knew enjoyed this scene because it is old. It is harkening back to Frankenstein. It is harkening back to, you know, creepy archaeological dig in this horrible, you know, place. Not even horrible, but just place of mysterious power. There's so much about it that is old, but it was kind of new to see it big screen Star Wars. It felt fresh.
Totally. I just going back to the first couple of viewings of me, just particularly the first viewing of just like, oh, wow, what is this? This is bonkers. That's some of my early reviews, even here in Four Centers. Like this movie is bonkers at times. And this is part of it. It's just like we are not on a Star Destroyer now here.
Yeah, exactly. We're not on a Star Destroyer anymore. We're not on the Star Destroyer named Kansas anymore. If this scene is a successful horror scene to you, why? Why is it scary?
It's scary because all the problems are internal, right? What is the scariest thing should be what's going on inside your heart. Can you keep those monsters at bay? And I see that there. And Kylo is facing a monster on the outside who is tapping on the shoulder of the monster inside him and spurning it on.
Yeah. I think you're exactly right. And I think the reason that, you know, it works for me as Star Wars, it works for the story of Palpatine not letting go and clinging to life, clinging to power. But it really works for me as Kylo's story of I will kill the past. I will, just extinguish the light and I will keep everything buried in this truth that there's just like, especially if it's stuff that's internal to you, you can't keep it buried. And I think that's the moment for me that works as Kylo's story in this Star Wars movie. But that's the part of it that makes this just a great horror scene where you get the thrill and the fear of putting yourself in the protagonist's place. And I think in this scene, Kylo is the protagonist. And he's basically, you know, descending into the dark basement, the metaphorical dark basement of his own soul. And there's a monster down there. And the monster wants to say all the worst things you think about yourself, all the worst things you think about the people around you. They're all true. And you should give in to just the worst things you feel. And that to me is just like the heart of a lot of horror. It's the heart of the creepy basement. There's this fear that if we go down too deep in ourselves, there's something horrible there. And it's a horror scene where that something horrible, you know, isn't an evil clown. It's not a cat who knocks over a can and does a jump scare. It's Darth Sidious, Sheev Palpatine as the monster in the basement facing you to face all of your darkest fears about yourself.
Yeah. And time and time again, Sheev has done that. Stoked the flames of terror and fear and suffering and oppression. And it starts with often our big characters collapsing on the inside.
Yep. And this is one of Sheev's greatest hits, this scene, in my opinion. This is a great conversation to have, Ken, because this is a scene that obviously a lot of people like. A lot of people, it represents some of their challenges with Rise of Skywalker. So it's great to talk through some of those challenges. And thank you for indulging me, because I do love spooky Halloween time. And this is one of the spookiest Star Wars scenes. So it was really fun to spend some quality time with it. So thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. This is a lot of fun. This is a scene, and I had been doing the research and watching the scene because it's at the beginning of the movie. Real danger of like, let me just keep watching. I just love this, the start of episode 9. I just really do. It's of all the Star Wars intros. I think the sequel trilogy does great with all of them, but this might be my favorite one. And I love the Revenge of the Sith. Gong, gong, bong, bong, war. I love that. But this is a special sequence to me.
Yeah. Excellent. Do you want to tell people where they can find us?
Well, I would love to, sir. You can find us in our own lab of horrors on Twitter. Force Center Pod. Use the hashtag Force Center to join the conversation. Our Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. We are on Instagram. And YouTube podcast is housed on Anchor, but heard there and at iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Amazon Music, and more. Just search and find us there. tpublic.com/user/ForceCenters, where you can buy merch, and patreon.com/ForceCenter is where you can support us. You can also support us directly on Anchor. And as we always say, support us if you want by telling a friend about Force Center. You can follow me at Ken Napsok or go to kennapsok.com for information on all the things I do, like books, podcast, too many podcasts. Hey, another podcast. Hey, why don't I start another podcast? It's all there on kennapsok.com.
You should start a podcast just called Too Many Podcasts, where you maybe like summarize each episode of your podcast.
That would be so much easier.
In 1 week. Well, thank you for doing this podcast with me. If you want to find me on the old internet, you can go to my website at josephscrimshot.com for my other podcast, Obsessed, and for comedy albums and all sorts of stuff like that. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram is at Joseph Scrimshaw. If you are listening to this as this episode comes out, I hope you have a great Halloween. If you celebrate, however you choose to celebrate, I hope you really enjoy it. And if you're listening as a Star Wars fan, which I imagine you probably are if you're listening to this, I can't wait for everyone to watch The Mandalorian Season 2. It's about to happen. But for now, that is it. That is our look at Palpatine's Lab of Horrors. For myself, for Ken, for Sheev Palpatine's broken, damaged little lightning fingers, this has been Force Center.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.